Off the Ball Rugby.
Thank you, and thanks for supporting us, and hopefully you keep supporting us and keep saying good things about us.
Good stuff. The likeable Stacey Flood, as always.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Okay, welcome along. Week two into week three. The season's already on and Jer's already missing the week.
It's Mick. No 49ers talk this week.
Yeah, no, we're actually going to, they're off the running.
They've been the Saints, so yeah, definitely not talking about them.
Barely beat the Saints. Already we're talking about them, though, Keane. You've done that thing.
Streisand
effect. By not doing it, etc. So anyway, here we are. It is a week and a half away from Croke Park.
Mm-hmm.
Me and you are going, we got accreditation.
I was getting big warnings outside in the office. Apparently, no matter what time of the year, the press box in Croke Park is just Baltic cold.
Yeah.
No, I assume you're a veteran there.
Well, this is late in the year, I suppose, for Croke Park in some ways. Although it was around about All-Ireland football finals back in the day. but yeah, there we go.
Let's get into split season talk. That's what we're going to do.
But anyway, it's a week and a half away, and in every way, I suppose, in terms of excitement, in terms of analysing, we had Dave Zirin in studio yesterday on Off the Ball for like a fascinating discussion on NFL empire building, basically, and different things like that. But it's sort of in every way, it feels very here now, in a way that it probably hasn't. It's kind of felt a bit futury. And this thing that will happen eventually, you know, like a big gig coming up or something like that, you know, it's miles away until it's right in front of you. And it does feel, in every way, again, positive and negative, huge.
I do like that you mentioned a big gig coming up, because I'm pretty sure you missed the big gig in Croke Park recently, but we won't bring that up either. There's another thing we're not going to talk about. Yeah, I've been watching out this week to see who's coming over, see who's around, like what Super Bowl winners we're going to get, and there are quite a few like next week. And it seems to be all Steelers, though. Like I haven't noticed anything from the Vikings side, so maybe they are treating it like a proper Steelers home game. My understanding from what I've heard is the tickets are massively going to Americans. So it's going to be like stepping into America. We just saw earlier today Virgin are going to show the game live on TV. We're doing the radio or on Off the Ball Sports Radio, so like there's full-on coverage happening. The favorite thing, and we were just talking about it before the show came on, when Max Starks is going around Ireland in like a camper van, and like most people listening don't know who Max Starks is. Max Starks is a 6'7" former Super Bowl winning left tackle and right tackle. So imagine just pushing him into a camper van and driving around into small little towns in Ireland.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, it's all going to centralise on Dublin eventually this time next week. The build-up will be in full swing. From what I gather, there's loads of events planned for it. I think if you're like a traditional Irish sports fan and not a huge NFL fan, it might be something a little bit different to you, but it's kind of what people have been calling out for with the All-Ireland Finals over recent times. Get this big, make this a massive event, even though in America it's just a general regular season game.
Yeah. Interesting to see how Irish fans react to it. Like it feels like we've been well primed for it at this stage with all of the college football and
this
everything
is different,
else.
Though.
So of course it's different, but it's a step up, from a similar thing. So it'll be interesting. In terms of the actual, we've been keeping an eye on both teams, obviously, for the first couple of weeks. They both won in week one and both beaten, kind of like disappointingly, I would say, in week two. The Steelers, my biggest issue with them might be that their defense isn't what we expected it to be this year. And we were kind of more worried about Rodgers and whether he'd be able to stay upright. And that's probably more of an issue for beyond week four than it is for the first month of the season anyway, with someone of his age. But the offense looks okay, if not spectacular, but the defense, which we expected to be incredible, has not been. And then for the Minnesota Vikings, we were happy with what we saw in week one with J.J. McCarthy's debut and what we already talked about as a kind of a stellar supporting cast around on both sides of the ball. But then they turned up on Sunday Night Football and he looked like a rookie quarterback that isn't quite ready yet. And they put up 9 points, I think.
Yeah.
So we're looking at it very differently kind of heading into week three than we were looking into week two.
Two teams that are, this is the nature of the NFL, right?
And yeah,
we had this conversation last week.
There's a lot of one-on-one teams, isn't there?
There's a 0-2 Chiefs team right now that I don't think anyone is overreacting to. But like, we talked about this last week. After 1 week, you can't overreact. After 2 weeks, you still can't overreact. I was going to say, wait until week 6 or 7, and then I might think I know something. Before then, I definitely don't know anything, and it's not until really the end of the season. But let's dive into these two teams in particular, and let's start with the Steelers, because they are the home team coming here. You mentioned the defense. I'm not massively concerned about the defense. What I would say is they dominated in week one. They were great in week one. Jalen Ramsey in particular was great in week one. And then the first half of this week, they were great again. And Jalen Ramsey again was ridiculous. He had an interception. He should have had another one. He was blowing receivers up anytime they came anywhere near him. And then halftime came and suddenly everything on the defense stopped working. Like, the Seahawks just kept in touch with them over the course of the first half.
Yeah.
And then in the second half, they actually got in behind Ramsey in particular, with Jackson Smith and Ajigba running right a post right down the middle of the field. And Sam Darnold did this thing, which is Sam Darnold's whole career of, I look like I don't know what this sport is for the first three quarters of the game.
Oh my God,
and then suddenly you're making these dimes and making these big plays. So sometimes you just get caught with that. Like the one actually, the one that's kind of unforgivable for the Steelers is...
The kickoff.
Well, yes, that. But
we should talk about that, though. Let's go on. Wait,
before we get to the kickoff, because actually you're all right, and I kind of forgot about that. But the one that's unforgivable for the defense, because I remember special teams is different from the defense, even though we don't put them all together. For the defense, it's... They were in a situation in the fourth quarter where they had turned the ball over deep in their own territory, and this was kind of the score that ended the game. And the Seahawks just ran a give-up play sideways, and they were like, oh, we'll take our field goal and get out of here. And the whole defense just parted, and it turned into a touchdown. And you're like, oh, game's over now. It doesn't matter what Rodgers does from here. Mm. That's the one where Monday morning, Mike Tomlin's going in and blowing up the locker room and shouting at everyone. But yes, the kickoff return, oh my God.
Well, just to go back, though, on the initial point about, like, Ramsey looking good and the defense overall looking good. I will say, though, they are... It's almost beyond that. He's going to shore up the backfield and that, like, or the... What's it? The secondary, sorry.
It's early in the season.
I'm struggling with my lingo. But, you know, he's going to shore up the secondary, absolutely, you know. But it's more at the front that I'd be worried about, because they're giving up a lot of yards and they're giving up a lot of long drives. And Justin Fields, we talked about him in our preview show 2 weeks ago, you know. The Jets, you have the Jets as, I think, the worst team in the league, certainly close
down
to
there,
it.
Yeah.
And one of them was Justin Fields is not a good enough quarterback. You look at what happened on week one, you're thinking, now Justin Fields has had good games before. This isn't a write off the Steelers defense. I'm just saying that it's a worry. Justin Fields looked really good and he almost won them the game. We saw, even pre-concussion in week two, a more normal Justin Fields performance, I would say, you know. So whether that's just one of his, he has that and they had a good game plan or not, who knows, but that's my slight concern. The kickoff, right? This is unbelievable. They changed the kickoff rules again. It's understandable for me and you not to quite know the rules.
I didn't know.
For a kick returner whose job it is to return the kicks, and I mean, you go to one practice session where they tell you what the rules are, and that's all you need. It's not that complicated. So ball lands in the end zone. In the old days, you let that go. That's an automatic touchback. This lands in the end zone. He decides, wave it off. The commentators are like, you have to cover that ball. You have to cover that ball. He doesn't. Seahawks burst up past him, get on the ball, touchdown from their own kickoff without anybody touching the ball. Don't know if it's ever happened in NFL history, because obviously the rules have changed, but it was cool. But it was the biggest brain fart I've ever seen. And to cost your team 7 points in a close game in an NFL season where you're expected to be a kind of a 9-8 team who might scrape into the number 7 seed, it was the difference between a win and a loss.
My favourite part of the whole thing, though, because the NFL rules are so convoluted and are so complicated, the commentators were like, oh my God, you have to cover that ball. You have to cover that ball.
And then
when it happened, they were like, wait, are we sure we're right? Because there was a pause and they were waiting for the ref to see what signal he made. And eventually he made the touchdown signal. And
he waited because your man didn't properly secure the ball in the end zone, I think. But that added to the drama. Well, yeah. I think so. But when I watched it again, I think you're right, is because that happened, the ref hesitated, which made the commentators hesitate, which made you think, is this the rule? I don't even know, you know?
But that is I know there's probably, I can't remember the specific player's name in this instance, so he was a young player, I believe, but it's one of these things where, like, coming from college football to the NFL,
he'll be a retired player soon.
Everyone thinks, oh, it's just another higher version of football. There's literally different rules. Different hash marks. There's different, like, the way the clock works. There's different rules on catching the ball and all that kind of stuff. So I can understand it to a degree. But like you said, this isn't... Like, let's say, for example, if we put Tyreek Hill back there, like the Dolphins did for one of their kickoffs, you'd kind of go, oh, fair enough, he's got a whole offensive stuff to concentrate on. Mm. He's got all his routes to remember.
He hasn't been in special teams.
They're just throwing him back there because they need a play. This guy is like, this is how I make the team. This is how I build my career. And you're still messing up like that? Come on, man.
Yeah.
You just can't get away with that. And ultimately, it costs his team massively. So it's going to linger in the mind of Tomlin. It's not going to be something he can easily look past.
Definitely. So that's the Steelers. And we're going to get to the big news of the week, which is Joe Burrow's injury and a few other things, the Chiefs, Eagles, everything like that. But just sticking, seeing as we're talking about Crow Park, the Vikings looked poor on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. And... where J.J. McCarthy's looking injured and...
Yeah.
Who's their backup?
Carson Wentz.
Carson Wentz.
There's a throwback for you.
Wow.
We had Mac Jones starting.
I saw him play in Wembley. Now, will I see him playing?
You might. Well, by the sounds of it, you will. So I couldn't get clarity on this, but it was, I think it was described as devastating or something catastrophic or whatever it is by Kevin O'Connell. So it does look like JJ McCarthy's going to be out for at least a couple of weeks, which means he probably will miss the Ireland game. Now, this is the nature of when you have an NFL game scheduled ahead of time. It's always going to be someone injured. It's always going to be someone who's out. Fortunately, the Vikings and Kevin O'Connell are kind of a team where, like this is a bit more of a larger scale conversation, I guess, but there are teams who are built to play well with their backup quarterback, and there are teams who are just guaranteed to fall apart with their backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Because of the offense Kevin O'Connell runs and the way they play and because of the wide receivers they have, there is a real chance that Carson Wentz can come in and make enough plays so they can still beat the Steelers, especially that version of the Steelers we saw last week. So it doesn't ruin the game, but it does take away an element of, we got this young, exciting quarterback who was a big part of the selling point of this game. And the other part of it is actually Aaron Jones is out as well at running back, which is a really big miss for them. So you're missing the two foundational pieces outside of Justin Jefferson. Now, Justin Jefferson's still there, so that's if he goes down, then we're really in trouble.
Yeah.
But without those two guys, you can bring in someone like Wentz, you can bring in Jordan Mason. Those guys can play well. They'll still be able to run the offense. They'll still be able to move the ball, so it still should be an exciting game. In terms of JJ McCarthy, in like looking outside the sphere of Ireland and the Ireland game, his start to this year, it's not a major concern because you knew he was coming in. He's essentially a rookie. Everything is too fast for him. He's so slow at diagnosing. And when he does diagnose well, he makes really good plays. So you're not concerned about him. But this injury, the timing of it's awful because he's now not going to build up that timing and build up that comfort. Instead, he's going to sit in the sideline, watch for a couple of weeks and then come back later. And actually, the Vikings are coming to Ireland and then they're going to England. So it's like, it's not a situation of they come over here and go back and they can just get back into their normal routine. The team's disrupted for a while now. I don't know if he'll come over. I'm guessing he'll stay back home on his own, which means he's just doing rehab over and
if
over again.
If this injury is what they kind of feared at the moment, And it's interesting because you look at, like, obviously, I'm talking about Drake May, but I think there's you know, plenty of others as well. There are players that, like, get a certain amount of games under their belt and May didn't come in until week five, I think, last year. And you could see the game slowing down from a little bit last Sunday. And that happens a lot in year two. Not everybody's Jaden Daniels or CJ Stroud. It happens a lot in year two. And McCarthy doesn't have those reps. And we can't really judge him until
he's not
he
even
has
in year two, really, is he?
7-8 games, if not more. Yeah. You know, so again, that, like, it's not to write him off, but it's to say that, like, you're dead right about that.
It just derails their season because it did feel like they could contend. And now you're kind of feeling like, oh, a good year for them would be if McCarthy has a strong finish to the regular season. And that's it.
Any thoughts on the Atlanta Falcons in that game?
Oh, yeah. Oh, finally. Because I've criticised them for so long. Yeah. And we've criticised Bijan Robinson to a degree for so
big
long.
Win, yeah.
They finally figured it out. They finally were like, that guy's really good. Let's give him the ball a bunch. And turns out, he makes plays when you do that.
I know.
So they, instead of using Tyler Allgeier too much and then trying to trick the defense into thinking Bijan Robinson doesn't exist, they were just like, all right, Bijan, we're giving you the ball. We're giving you the ball again. We're giving you the ball again. You tell us when you're tired and we'll bring Allgeier in. And Allgeier's actually pretty good in that role because he's coming into more favorable situations. And they were just able to run the ball all day. Now, the Vikings defense probably should have been better and should have contained him. But Robinson looked faster than ever. He was in, like, because that was the selling point of Robinson coming out. And I liked him. I liked him a lot. I didn't like him as this top 10 pick that he was at the time. And everyone was talking about, this is a Danny Tomlinson and he's going to be generational and he's going to change the whole offense. That didn't happen. And I don't expect that to happen. But he has come in and he's looked comfortable. Like, similar to what you were talking about a quarterback, although it's year three now for Bijan. He came in and he's like on his where he needs to be within the design of the running play. But then he gets trapped and there's like two guys around him and he's just making the miss and he's shaking them off and suddenly he's exploding. And it's like, this is what everyone's been celebrating you for years and you haven't been doing it. Now you're doing it. I'm like, oh, I get it now. You are actually really, really good. But we need this like Saquon Barkley every week. We don't need this once and then you disappear for a while.
Yeah. And you have, as you mentioned, Allgeier is a very good kind of like in the secondary role. He's a very strong running back to have. So you make yourself a pound and ground team. You open up play action and like you've got a good receiver in Drake London who doesn't need to be involved for 2 weeks maybe. You give Penix that sort of chance to find his rhythm a little bit as well. They're bringing Kyle Pitts into the game a little bit more than they have in years. We still...
Another one
let's wait to be seen, but let's think of him as a receiver rather than a tight end and just say, right, let's get him the ball. He can get open. And yeah, the Falcons offense, we've been, again, you mentioned, we've been setting it up for 3 years. Let's actually see it. So,
and what helps?
And I thought they were good in week one. That was a, that I think is going to be an underrated game come the end of the season. I think the two of them are going to be far and away from the other two teams in their division anyway, the Bucks and the Falcons, and could both be playoff teams, I would say.
That's what I was going to say. It'll be them against your boy Baker Mayfield in Tampa Bay. Because yeah. The Panthers look terrible again, which is frustrating me. And the...
I know.
What's in that division?
Saints.
Yes.
Who actually have looked okay, but there's such a talent deficit there. But it's actually, to be fair to Kellen Moore, like, he's got the most out of them.
Yeah.
And that's a good sign for their future, if you're a Saints fan like I live
with.
Not
for this year.
I live with a Saints fan who's very frustrated. And I am trying to constantly say, I wouldn't be too unhappy with this. They're not wilting. You know, they're there. They're fighting games.
You were kind of this 2 years ago before Drake May. Not as bad.
I was a little. Well, I don't know about that.
We should mention, by the way, because we mentioned the Falcons and the Vikings, and this actually naturally leads us on to the Bengals.
Yeah.
Did you realize Kirk Cousins was still there? I had kind of forgotten.
I did, but only because, again, it's been brought up in things I've been listening to or reading in much the same way you have just brought it up. As in, this guy's just like hanging around there, and he is like, he is that year off his Achilles injury in the way that they always say.
Look at Rodgers.
You know, exactly. Now, and we didn't even talk about the fact that Rodgers actually does look like he's got his fast arm. Again,
amazing to me.
Wait and see what it's like in week 8, but right now, so far so good if you're a Steelers fan. But there's no reason to think that Kirk Cousins can't still be at least an NFL starting quarterback, if not elite anymore.
I mean, he wasn't awful when he was playing before he got benched. Like, they moved on to Phoenix. Like, he wasn't good, but I don't generally rate him anyway. But, like, he's someone who, like, let's say if your options are Carson Wentz or your options are Jake Browning, I mean, it's not a cut and dry of you definitely go for Cousins because you have to give stuff up and their salary and all that kind of stuff. But he is better than them, I would be confident in saying. Yes, no, maybe not.
Well, I don't know, because it's not that he's not better than them. I think he probably is, but you're giving up a bit to get him, and you know, salary cap issues and whatever, and then you're kind of stuck with Kirk Cousins. Because Burrow, it's kind of confirmed today, he's out for 3 months. They haven't officially announced surgery yet, but that would be the timeline of him taking the surgery.
By the way, does turf toe happen to anyone else in any other sport in the world? I only ever hear it in American football.
I wonder, is it just... even if they called it something else, like a toe ligament injury that you need surgery on, I don't hear much about it, I have to say. Yeah, it must, though. It must happen to footballers, you would think. But maybe it's just the changing... I don't know why. Why would it not happen to rugby players, for example?
Is it because of the... I wonder,
there's a lot of stepping.
Is it the fact we play on grass? Because I remember when I was in America, and they were kind of amazed that we didn't play everything on turf. You know, the AstroTurf that they... Like, they obviously have high-quality AstroTurf.
Yeah.
But I wonder, is that what it is? And maybe that's where they get the turf toe from.
Well, yeah, okay, so anyway, turf toe, he's out for 3 months, which is, I think we should get back to the Joe Burrow career path, I suppose. But they have won games, because Burrow's always injured, they have won games with Browning before. They came back and won that game. I don't think all down to him, but that was, they did win, didn't they? I'm not remembering it wrong.
They
were on the 1 yard line for about an hour and a half, and then they won against the classic Jaguars. I don't think their season is over. They're also not really...
31-27 they won.
Yeah, I don't think it's a team that we were overly excited about anyway, except if you're like a fantasy owner who had, you know, Chase and Higgins. I'm just curious as to where they go. Do they make a move for a Kirk Cousins? Do they say, right, we're missing one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL, but we're a team with an explosive offense that a competent quarterback can still get the ball to Chase and Higgins and a decent running back?
So let me preface this by saying nothing's going to happen because Mike Brown is the cheapest owner in football and does not do any of these moves. He's like worse than Jerry Jones, except not toxic or not public, so no one really knows it unless you're a big football guy. You mentioned T. Higgins in the middle of that. That's the one where it kind of frustrates me a little bit, because he looks better than ever. He looks slender in a way that he hasn't before. T. Higgins has always been a really good receiver and a guy who can get downfield and make plays, but now he's actually like... Now, you wouldn't once they actually start running their routes. But when they line up, you can mistake him and Chase for each other, which wouldn't have been the case before, because T. Higgins was this big block. And it wasn't a problem for him. But because he's lost that bit of weight, he's got that little bit more dynamism in him. And you saw that touchdown from Jake Browning where he was down the right sideline and Browning dropped it in and he catches it and the defenders bounce off him. And previously, he would have been able to bounce the defenders off him as well. But this time, the way in which he did it was so different.
Yeah, he stopped on his toes and moved inside. Yeah,
and it was so much smoother. So you're kind of looking at that going, oh, there's a real opportunity here with those two freak wide receivers, because now you've got a guy who no one in the league can cover in Chase. You always had that compliment in Higgins, who was really good. But if Higgins has raised his level, now you've suddenly got two number ones, essentially, and you can attack any defense you want. To talk about the Cousins part, so they do have an out after this season of the contract, so you would be taking on $45 million in dead cap, which does sound like a crazy amount, but for a quarterback, it's actually not that bad, all things considered. Still, it's probably
they're also paying Joe Burrow dollar, like, yeah.
So there is a way of doing it, and Cousins would probably agree to restructure some of his contract to get a chance to play. Maybe he wouldn't, because he's at the end of his career. Maybe he would. That's a conversation they can have. I think the other probably aspect to it is that they are still in a division with the Ravens, where you do expect the Ravens to kind of run away with that division.
This is it. Because, like, so say Christmas is his out time. I don't know what IR designation they have him on, but I presume it's like a...
They definitely give him the option to come back anyway.
Yeah, okay, right. So you imagine like 12 weeks minimum. So say they can bring him back earlier, but, you know, you're probably be talking week 14 earliest, I would say.
That's probably being optimistic, yeah.
And that's been very optimistic. That's the earliest.
Still,
week 15,
you'd have 3 weeks 15. Left.
Yeah, are they in it? That's the question. Like, I mean, getting that win, they're 2-0.
Well, with Jake Browning. Like, so let's,
Browning can win games, for sure. Yeah. And they'll beat the Browns. Well, they've already played the Browns once, but and didn't beat them too convincingly.
The
but,
guarantee option.
You know, they've got that. You'd expect them to at least be competing with the Steelers, and then it's across the rest of the AFC.
Let's jump through it here. Just say yes or no quickly, and where do you think they have a chance of winning with Jake Browning? A realistic chance.
Yeah.
They're playing the Vikings.
Yes.
Broncos.
Yes.
Lions.
We'll talk about them in a few minutes. Probably not the Lions. No.
Packers.
No.
Steelers.
Yeah.
Jets.
Yeah.
Bears.
I'd expect them to beat the Jets. Yes, certainly a chance against the Bears.
Steelers.
Yeah.
Patriots.
Yeah.
Ravens.
No.
Bills. Ravens.
No, Bill. No, that's a 3-week stretch that I wouldn't envy anyone now, I have to say.
Dolphins, Cardinals.
Dolphins and Cardinals, both, yeah. Especially as that'll be post Arizona being relevant.
This is the thing, though. If Burrow comes back on the timeline we're talking about, he's coming back into the Ravens, Bills, Ravens stretch, and it's like, ooh.
I think my toe still hurts, lads.
Do you want him for them, or do you want to wait till after then? I guess it depends what your record is, really.
Like, that is the schedule. Like, they won't win all of those games, obviously, but if you win...
If you're the seventh team in.
Yeah.
With a healthy Joe Burrow.
10 games, I think, gets you into the playoffs with seven teams. 10-7. So, yeah, interesting. What about Burrow then? Because, like, he's made a Super Bowl. It's not as if he's done nothing in his career. He was the number one overall pick. He's established himself, people would say, as kind of maybe on the second level behind the big three, but like maybe Herbert gets to that or whatever, but a few people have to do work to get up to Burrow level.
There's no question.
But he's always injured.
Yeah.
And this is a toe injury, but it's still a surgery in week two, but it's not his back. And, you know, you would take, or his knee, and you would take some solace in that, but it's another injury. It's just very hard for him to get momentum. Yeah. And for some reason, you mentioned a cheap owner, they just will not spend money on protection.
Yeah, they spent draft picks that they haven't worked out. They won't go and get a big free agent. That's just the way they are, and it's always the way they are. And that to me is always an interesting one, like, because Eli Manning played behind very good offensive lines at times, then played behind terrible offensive lines and got sacked 50 plus times, and he never got hurt. It was just, I think some people are built that way, some people aren't. Now, that's not to say you won't get unlucky at some times. The other thing is, when you do have serious injuries, they tend to force your body to compensate elsewhere and leads on. The bigger issue for Burrow at this stage is, as much as we say he's achieved a lot and we don't really question him individually of his talent, he's 29 now. Like, Patrick Mahomes just turned 30. These guys are not young anymore. They're not old, but they're at that point where your career is probably more of it behind you than ahead of you. So,
sure. Aaron Rodgers, 42.
Well, yeah, it depends. Like, if you're getting as injured as off as Joe Burrow
is. But I suppose it is, you almost think, like, if you want to think quarterback, and we're talking, like, yesterday with Dave about, like, you know, an average of 3.5 years is the average NFL. You're talking quarterback, you're thinking more like a football goalkeeper.
Probably.
Where 29 is young for a goalkeeper, but it's
if you're very
young.
You know,
are you investing in a big, you know, are you paying $100 million for a 29-year-old outfield player? maybe not, but you would for a goalkeeper because he could have 8 years left or 9 years left.
Yeah. And
but
the importance of him as well, I suppose. Yeah. The quarterback is more important than the goalkeeper in theory, even though goalkeeper.
Oh, no, 100%. Sorry, but I just mean in terms of age you would judge it. Yeah.
So just to go through like why this is such a big deal for Joe Burrow at this point. So back in 2017, he was at Ohio State. He was the backup quarterback there. He never actually started for Ohio State at all, as far as I know. He broke his wrist in 2017. So that's fine. He gets over that, plays 2018, 2019 healthy. Well, actually, I don't know if he played in 2018. He then transferred to LSU. He plays in 2020, has arguably the greatest college football quarterback season of all time at LSU, wins a national championship, sets all sorts of records, has Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson and the most ridiculous offense you'll ever come across at the college level. And he plays with torn rib cartilage. That's 2020. Then he comes into 2020 with the Bengals, same obviously year, but obviously he's moved into the NFL now. He tears his ACL, PCL, MCL and meniscus in that horrendous injury towards the end of his rookie season where I think it's Washington defender comes straight onto his knee and the leg just bends the wrong way. Yeah. He dislocates his finger in 2021. He has an MCL sprain in 2022, has a calf strain in 2023, and tears wrist ligaments also in 2023. And now we have turf toe in 2025.
It's a lot of body, isn't it? Sure.
That this is all going to keep building up. And he's a quarterback, as we've talked about, gets hit quite a bit. He's not someone who sits there, catches the ball, gets rid of it instantly, or is not someone that can be protected. The Bengals aren't built that way. They are built to win games by scoring a lot and by the quarterback carrying the offense. So it's a really, really big concern for them long term. Now, I don't question at all whether they're going to keep him or whether they're going to tie their franchise's future to him. It would be insane for them to trade him because if they tried to, there would be 20-plus teams with big packages for them. I don't think that's a factor. But I do think you might have a situation where, a little bit like Carson Palmer, who was there beforehand, it gradually, slowly kind of drops off more than you expect it to. And what could end up happening, similar to Carson Palmer, is maybe he reaches 33, 34, and they're like, oh, it's time for the Bengals to move on from Joe Burrow, and he goes somewhere else, and he lands with his Bruce Arians or whoever it is, the way Palmer did. And Palmer actually had a couple of MVP-caliber seasons at a point when everyone thought he was completely washed up. So it's kind of an easy comparison to make because they're both Bengals quarterbacks, but you can kind of see that path for him now. Or he could come back mid-season this year and light the place on fire and bring the Bengals to the Super Bowl, because that's how good he is.
And I kind of hope he does.
Of course,
I don't think the Bengals are good enough to make the Super Bowl, but you kind of want... You want to see players like Joe Burrow reach their potential, but it just gets
worrying. It makes the sport better.
It gets, absolutely, and it gets worrying at this stage, though, when it's another... If we were to sit here and have a negative preseason show, what quarterback goes down in week two and misses 3 months of the season? We're all putting our hands up for Burrow, aren't we?
Like, you know,
that's Tua might not last regardless of injury.
Brock Purdy, Tua, this stage is kind of going that way. We're not going to talk about 49ers, but he's injured again too.
Chiefs Eagles.
I don't know about you. I was like, do we have to talk about this game?
Well, like,
I feel like we talk these teams to death over
in
the years.
A weird way. It's like, I know it was the big like Tom Brady game and everything like that on Fox and America's Game of the Week and all, but how last year's Super Bowl with the Eagles' big market team and Patrick Mahomes wasn't the nighttime game was unbelievable. I was surprised I was able to watch this game.
But you're kind of
while
happy to,
still
though,
awake. I was happy to watch it, yeah. And then I did watch it. I tried not to red zone it too much except for during the ad breaks. And I was bored by it.
Yeah.
I thought it was a dull L game. Now that's a sign of
punting.
Two very good defenses, and there's something to
this
be said.
I was gonna ask you. No, sorry.
They can be exciting too.
They can be, but this is what I was gonna ask you. Are we giving them too much of the benefit of the doubt to say, oh, this is playoff intensity, this is two really good defense, or was it just two terrible offense? Because I'm not sure. I'm watching it and I was trying to think to myself, are these teams bad, or are these teams so good that they're holding each other down and forcing each other to win in difficult ways?
So I don't think the Eagles' offense is bad. I think they are... I think they're, you know, horses for courses and playing winning football. Mm-hmm. And they're not really worried about what it looks like.
Yeah.
And they're not bringing their two elite receivers into it because they can win without them. They can win with Barkley and Hurts and tush pushes and
the most boring
nonsense, you know, like real, like awful to watch stuff. But they have the two boys there if they need them, and they can go and chase a game if they need to as well, but they rarely do. And they rely on their defense stopping the offense and so on. So I don't think they're a bad offense. I think they're a conservative offense. The Chiefs, I think, if I'm being, you're like on a different stratosphere of being able to analyze quarterbacks than I am. But watching them for 2 weeks, I think Mahomes is playing better than he played last year, and they have nothing.
They're congested is what I feel like every time I watch them. It's like everything's squashed together. I will say Mahomes missed a couple of open throws as well this week, which I kind of went, ooh, that's...
I was happy to see him throw the ball. Yeah. Like, it's somewhat downfield again.
Like Tyquan Thornton, one where he was wide open.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened there, but maybe that was a misunderstanding.
But are you sure Tyquan Thornton is running the right route there?
That's what I was going to say. Now, he did catch a deep one at the end of the game, and that was a really good play and a really good throw from Mahomes, which he, again, for a second week in a row, he's making these spectacular plays at the end just to keep it close. And, like...
And he's using his legs because he has to, which I think he'd rather not do in week two of the season. Yeah,
I mentioned he turned 30, and like, remember we used to come in here and we'd have the conversations about Mahomes, and we'd be weeks into the regular season, and it's like, oh, hasn't started running yet, lads. He'll start running when he needs to, and when it's playoff time, and it's like week two, he ran 10 times or something. Yeah. I know he's great at it. He was really, really good and really effective in the touchdown in particular. Actually, if you saw the play before the touchdown where he lowers his shoulder on 3rd and 6 and goes over a defensive back, I'm kind of going, don't you love that. But then you go, oh, that's my quarterback. No. I do not need my quarterback doing
that. He's a dynasty fantasy owner.
But
don't be doing that.
He's in a situation where he needs to make those plays. Yeah. We've never had him in this position in week two where he needs to make those plays, which highlights how bad the offense is. And look, let's not cut, well, we can't cut this anymore. Travis Kelce is completely washed up. Like, and he caused the interception in the fourth quarter. He's getting open in the situations where
they need to use him
open.
Less. Yes. They need to use him less. He can still do, he can do what your average starting tight end in the league can do and catch like 4 balls for 12 yards a go over the course of a game and have a decent tight end game. They stop, don't make him the focal point anymore.
That's what they desperately need.
Who are they going to make the focal point?
Once Wordy comes back, they need Rashee Rice desperately. They were wearing t-shirts free Rashee all the time, and I know that's a whole other thing because he deserves to be suspended. But he,
going back to the start about how our love for the NFL and its complicated nature.
Yes. When he comes back, anyway, look, that will open the offense up and that will kickstart them. But at this point, I'm kind of going, what hole will the Chiefs be in once he comes back? I don't think you're talking about this being the number one or number two seed at this stage, which doesn't matter to them, I don't think. But we might actually see Mahomes go on the road in the playoffs for once and actually have to go and win a game, like go and beat Justin Herbert in Los Angeles. Now, like, say that as if that's a really difficult thing, but like, it's also like the way the Chargers look right now, it doesn't look like it's going to be a foregone conclusion like it has been in the AFC before. A lot of times.
Sometimes you can be waiting for the big return,
the savior,
and everything's going to open up. Now, it's their two fastest receivers are both out, and they will be both back. So that will, like, and obviously will change things. But as you said, it could be in a hole, but they're also out of rhythm.
Yeah.
And it's going to be tough to find. And look, I'm sorry. I know everybody thinks that eventually we're going to see a 1,000-yard or 1,500-yard season from Pacheco. I don't think it's ever coming.
I was going to mention him. He caught a ball in the flat in this game, and he was just instantly tackled from behind or from in front when it was a position of, like, you're a running back, you've got a linebacker in front of you, and you space left, space right, space all around you. And it was just like, oh, I'm going to run right into you.
Yeah, the running back who should be the most peripheral vision of anybody on the field with the ball in
their hands. The guy tackling him should be terrified, and he wasn't at all. And that kind of sums up the whole offense for me right now.
So I just, like, I don't know. Maybe he is talented and they don't run good enough schemes. I don't know. Like, I mean, let's face it, like, Andy's getting old as well. You know, he's had an awful lot of success. Coaches don't stay great forever. So let's see. Like, there's nobody giving up on them, but I suppose, are we talking about it now in terms of giving up on them, or are we saying, here's some red flags?
Do you remember?
And I think it's fair enough to point out red flags to an 0-2 Chiefs team.
Do you remember Marion Barber?
I do remember Marion Barber. Cowboys, yeah.
Do you remember, like, how, like, he was great, and then just suddenly gone?
That happens to so many NFL players, like,
NFL running backs, though, in particular, and especially the guys who, like Pacheco, are like, I'm going to put my head down and run into you, and I'm going to blow you up. It only lasts for 2 or 3 years. We talked earlier about the average career being 3 years long or whatever it is. Pacheco's 26, and he runs like he's 34, and it's like, your career is already gone, and you were really good previously, but now, because of the beating you've taken, you're just so slow, and it kind of feels like, I mean, you're talking about Man City, and Man City look really slow, and they've played a million games over the last 4 years. You got to remember the Chiefs have added basically a full season of playoff games at this point as well. Yeah. So the whole thing is just slow and stodgy. And I came into the year saying I think the Chiefs are going to win 15 plus games because I thought Mahomes was just going to be pissed off and he's just going to run everything. And he has been to a degree.
Yeah, I feel like he's been better, honestly, yeah.
But there's only so much you can do.
They haven't come with him.
There's only so much you can drag.
Pat's Dolphins, right? This was a thrilling game, believe it or not. I can't remember the last time it was a thrilling Patriots game. But it was the first time since 1992, Keane, that there was a punt return for a touchdown, followed immediately by a kickoff for a touchdown.
Do you know, red zone has fried my brain because I feel like that happens every other week.
Yeah, no, no. Well, I couldn't believe it because, and also the fact that the Patriots returner was Antonio Gibson, who I thought was, I used to have him in my like dynasty league when he was at Washington. I was like, this guy's out of the league 4 years. And I was like, why are the Patriots? And actually, do you know what? Over the course of the game, impressive performance in general. It looked like he had something left in him.
He's found his perfect role, I'd say.
But Ramondre Stevenson, full-on throwback game. He was the best player on the field. He was really, really good. I just looking at your notes here, and it's just interesting to me that you have like that the Patriots are running the offense really well for May. Clear reads, bootlegs, play action. You're not mentioning, what do you call it, when in motion, right? But again, my lingo isn't up to speed after week two. But all of that is completely different than what they did in week one. It's a really bizarre change because they ran this stagnant, boring run up the middle for a yard and offense that didn't do anything in week one, that didn't try anything, to this genuinely dynamic, well-organized, you know, there was the play to Stevenson where they, on third and three, that they made for 50 yards or whatever, that kind of opened up the game when it looked like it was getting away from them.
The wheel route.
Yeah, absolutely. And a beautiful throw from May. But there was even a point where they were in like second and 15. And for 4 years, that's been a punt for the Patriots. I swear, like, you know, I'm actually not exaggerating.
Yeah.
They don't get out of second and long. And they had, you know, a smart play to get to like third and three or third and two. And they made a first down, and you're like, this, there's a plan here. This is an offense. And I swear to God, they might win four games again this year. But if they can come out of it and think this is an offense, and this actually has a bit of organization, a bit of plan, Patriots fans are going to be happy.
Well, the touchdown, the first touchdown of the game to tall fella who doesn't wear shoes. No, the other fella. It wasn't the first one.
Matt Collins?
Yeah. That's a great example of like the clarity of the offense, because there's a bootleg play action on the backside, and Hollins is wide open, and Drake May is completely taken away because the pass rush has all gone with the running game, because they'd run the ball so much, and they'd shown that look over and over again, and then they work off it to get the wide open touchdown.
There's an
actual thought process there to what you're doing calling plays. But you mentioned the Ramondre Stevenson play, and I really want to go back to that, because that play, like, it's one of those ones, if you're watching the quarterback in college, you get really excited about it, because he steps up, he breaks the sack attempt from Jalen Phillips, who whips around the edge, he finds a little space in the pocket, and then he hits Stevenson, not perfectly in stride, but in stride enough that Stevenson can stay upright and then continue downfield. And it's a beautiful throw, and it's a brilliant play, and it shows off the mindset of him, of Drake May. But for me, watching him, you pair it with the one that came before it, because the play that came before it was that second and 15 that you're talking about, where the defense drops back, and you can almost see it in May. He drops into the pocket, and he's got this time, and he's like, oh, my shoulder has jumped here because I've seen something downfield that I really want to throw to, but the defense is all down there. So he's got to stop himself, and he holds the ball, and he just takes the check down, gives it to Stevenson underneath. He gets the 7 or 8 yards and sets up that manageable third down. And that's where you're like, oh, this is a quarterback who's running the offense and managing the game. Meaning, when you have those big plays, it's not just, oh, I've tried this four times, I've got 3 incompletions, I might have got an interception, but I've got this one big play. Instead, it's, oh, I've tried this once and it's worked once because I've done it in the right scenario and the right position to do it, and that's set up by the play beforehand. This is the kind of thing that leads to consistency over the long term, and this is the kind of thing that you want to be evaluating when you're looking to try and take the individual out of the offense around them. Because you can always look at the full numbers, you can always look at the big plays, whatever. When you are trying to win games, you need your quarterback to do those plays and to do the other plays, because you want your big plays, but the bread and butter down and distance, keeping the offense on track, that's the stuff that really matters. And that's the stuff, not that I questioned could May do it, but him coming out of college, he had the big plays.
Until you see it, you don't know in the NFL. Like, and I think that's his second win as a professional.
Really?
You know, yeah.
Is that
because
last year?
No, because last year was Joe Milton got the stupid week 17 pick that cost him the number one pick. And it was what's the name?
Not Brian Hoyer.
Brissett got the first two wins. And then May came in and only got one, despite, I think, what everybody was very happy with, a good rookie season. But actually to go and win, and his best game as a Patriot, as a professional footballer, without a doubt. But you have, just to kind of put it into context, May played brilliantly. Ramondre, throwback game, did really well. Had a kick return for a touchdown. Had, like the kicker missed two extra points, fair enough, like, you know, but he nailed a 53-yarder later on then. But you also had like a defence where Milton Williams looks exceptional, gets the game-winning sack at the end of the game. You've got Landry on the edge, who I think people were saying was kind of like brought in as a kind of a vibes guy because...
bit harsh. He was a starter in Tennessee.
Yeah, but almost as in terms of free agency, it was like, this is Vrabel bringing in a guy he knows as a leader. Yeah, and it's like, but he's been brilliant. He's had nearly four sacks, I think, maybe 3.5 sacks already.
The thing with him is he used to have to play every single snap in Tennessee. Yeah. So now he's presumably not doing that, which means he's actually like fresh and can actually explode off the line.
Absolutely. But like Barmore looks good. So it's like, there's the run defense especially looks really good. The pass rush looks good. I think there's the most sacks in the league. Secondary still has the best player, one of the best corners in the league to come back, and the linebackers are terrible, right? So, but that's the first negative thing I've said. Mm-hmm. And they won the game because the Dolphins receiver stepped out of bounds when there was no need to step out of bounds. And you have to take all that into context. This is all a step forward. This is not a finished product. This is nobody shouting playoffs or anything like that. They shouldn't have won the game. But the other side of it is the Patriots never win in Miami. And especially not in September when it's 100-odd degrees. Very few teams do. Which brings us, I think appropriately, to the Miami Dolphins, who are the worst defense in the league by all statistics, which we weren't expecting. Their offense is absolutely terrible. They had a few moments, but again, you're playing against the Patriots defense, who we saw what they let the Raiders do when the Raiders did nothing on Sunday night. You know, that defense has a lot of work to do still, despite the pass rush. The Dolphins are in absolute crisis. And where do they go tomorrow night?
Buffalo. Oh, nice. Well, that's going to be an absolute travesty. Tua's never good there. Not that he's good in any other places, but that's where he's particularly bad. Sorry, my brain, as soon as you said the Patriots never win in Miami, my brain has been over and over playing Gronk trying to stop the kick returner running back in the corner, which is like the most devastating loss in Patriots recent history, which is saying something because you've had some
Brandon Bolden loss as well, who was a Patriot before after.
Who was Ramondre Stevenson before Ramondre Stevenson existed. Also, calling Ramondre Stevenson a throwback player when he's 27 years of age is fantastic, which reiterates our
point. Performance from him, because when he came in, he was an exciting running back in a bad team, and it's kind of leveled off, I suppose. So it was kind of nice to see him still be elite.
Let's get to the Dolphins, because the second play of the game, you mentioned Ramondre Stevenson. There is a play where he takes the ball up the middle. Actually, it might have been the third play. I think it was third and two. He takes the ball up the middle, and the timing of the offense, this is one of the plays where the offense didn't work properly. The timing of the offense is completely messed up because the tight end's coming in motion and he actually runs into the running back. And Bradley Chubb is right there. Bradley Chubb, veteran outside linebacker, high first round pick years ago, has been a good player over the course of his career, playing for Denver. Now he's in Miami.
All year last year, I thought he'd make a big difference.
And he's standing right there. All he's got to do is not dive in, not dip his head, not dip his shoulder, and he can stay upright and just tackle Ramondre Stevenson at the line or for a loss, and you're punting. He tackles the tight end who was in motion, and Stevenson bounces and just runs outside, and he's completely free. Mm. And you're kind of going, oh, so last week against the Colts, we're just continuing on what we did last week, where everyone's all over the place at all times and no one's doing anything that makes any sense, which is what's killing the Dolphins. They're so unorganized, they're so bad in tackling, they're so bad in space, but it's a really weird thing because typically, if you just stockpile pass rushers in the NFL, you will be at some way decent because getting a pass rush is so invaluable. Jalen Phillips is a really good pass rusher off the edge. Bradley Chubb is a really good pass rusher off the edge. Matthew Judon, who you will know from his time in New England, was always a good pass rusher. He can move around the offensive or move around the defensive line a little bit too. You've got three really good pass rushers there. You've got Jordan Phillips and Zach Sealer on the inside who can also rush a passer. And you're kind of going, how is this defense so bad?
Yeah.
And it's because they can't get everything in control and they can't get everything put together. So I had to actually look up who the defensive coordinator was for them, and it's Anthony Weaver, who's been there for a while. So I think he's probably the first, what do they call him?
Casualty?
The one knocks into the other.
Domino?
Yeah, he's
there
the first.
He's We're
the
struggling
first.
With our words today.
It's a difficult time, lads. so he's the first domino to go, I think. I think you'll probably see him go in a week or two, and then after that it becomes a bit of a countdown clock for the coach.
At the same time, though, they've got a Thursday game. They could lose it heavily.
It's probably tomorrow night, actually.
And, you know, they've got a Thursday game, and then they'll have a whatever it is,
Josh Allen with his broken nose scoring 16 touchdowns on you. That's got to be fun, right?
10-day wait until their next. By the way, Josh Allen, when he, like, you see him kind of like groggy, it turns out it's only his nose, and then come on, it's like they're getting 40 points in, you know, every week.
Even when he went off.
I'm wondering, are they just like is this season going to be boring? And the Bills just like unstoppable juggernaut. Like.
Alan went off and Mitch Trubisky came in and hit a deep crossing rush. And I was like, all right, Grant. So that's how this game's going. Yeah. Actually, I did notice.
Let's see Mitch 8 plays in though. Yeah.
Red zone was like, all right, we saw that. This game is clearly over. We're not going back to it. They showed like 2 plays from it the whole rest of the day.
So the Dolphins are terrible. Patriots shown some improvement, but we'll have to wait and see. They've got a...
By the way, sorry, before we go off the Patriots game, Kayshawn Booty, I don't know if we talked about him last week,
yeah,
but I did want to say that touchdown play that he made is really, really good, really impressive. But he's one of these receivers, I possibly said this last week, I might be repeating myself, he doesn't have one great trait or even 2 great traits, but he's really good at everything. Mm. And I love those guys because they hang around the league forever. Like, it's Kendrick Bourne was that a while ago before he kind of fell off in New England.
He's gone to 49ers now.
And I think he'll actually be a really valuable Patriots receiver for the long term, but he'll never be your number one. You'll always need, like, where's my star? And he can be a compliment.
And also May is going to, it's going to take a little bit of time for him to be able to use 5 receivers in the way that Brady would have. You know, at the moment you go to your 1 and 2 guy and someone like Booty is going to get rare touches. But if he can score touchdowns every time he does it.
Then, especially when you have 2 tight ends who can catch the ball there as well.
Yeah, exactly. Bears Lions. Look, the Lions, we probably don't need to talk about them too much. I think
they look more like themselves than they did
last year. Sign of mad regression seems like it's not going to be true. It's like, and especially the play, it was St. Brown and Gibbs, and you're like, right, well, they're still who they, even without Ben Johnson, they're still St. Brown and Gibbs.
Yeah.
They'll be fine. But the Bears, really disappointing start to the year. I've seen a lot of harbingers of doom, a lot of discussion about their like depression levels as a fan base. You looked at this game and thought Caleb actually work in progress in a way that probably the general headlines aren't telling you.
And I'm not a big Caleb Williams guy. I haven't been at all since he's come into the league. I find him chaotic and a bit like he doesn't follow a consistent process, which for me is always a big red flag. Yeah. Unless you're like spectacularly good at that, then that's going to be a problem. He had one awful interception, or absolutely terrible decision. It was 2nd and 32 or something because his offensive line kept having penalties and he just heaved the ball up into no one and Kirby Joseph just dived underneath it and intercepted it. And it was an important play, but they didn't actually concede on the drive afterwards, so it wasn't actually what cost them this game or set the game in a wrong direction. So basically, with Caleb, he was throwing on time a lot. He was hitting the top of his drop, making really good decisions, hitting good windows, making the right play. The offense around him was failing quite a bit. Like the offensive line was struggling. Odunze hit 2 big drops, at least 2. Actually, I think he hit a 3rd one as well. And then like the whole setup of the offense was struggling. Now, this is after they scored the first 2 touchdowns because I think it was 14-14. The game was kind of in the balance. They were going back and forth. They had stops. And then eventually the Lions were just like, all right, we're going to hit into this third gear that we have here and we're going to score on our next 4 drives. And we're going to take and it's not only that. We're going to score with big plays from deep. Jameson Williams is going to go deep. Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to go deep. Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be unstoppable as he is, which is what we're kind of used to the Lions looking like. Yeah. But overall,
and they're at different stages of development. I think Bears fans shouldn't be too disappointed just because the Lions lost in week 1. You know,
well,
there's another
team
in their division that are elite and they lost to them, but the Lions are still one of the top NFC teams and the Bears are at a starting
point. It matters how you're there though, because let's say this game happened exactly the same way, but the offense around Caleb Williams is really good and Caleb Williams is really bad. Like, that's where you're like, ooh, this development plan now isn't great. Whereas if your quarterback's on the right track and he's going in the right direction, he's developing and everything else around him isn't great, you wish it was better. Everything else, like, it doesn't really make sense because there's 10 guys around him and there's 1 quarterback. You can replace the other 10 guys a lot more easily than you can replace the quarterback. So if the quarterback is good and then it's a matter of, right, we need to keep building this out, we need to keep adding to this, eventually we'll get there. Now, Bears fans probably came into the season being like, oh, we're going to be playoff team, we're going to be challenging. Yeah. You're just not there yet. That's not where you're at.
We're far too reactionary for these things because you've got a new coaching staff coming in, an offensive guru who's going to work with this quarterback to try and make him something. It's going to take time. It's not to say it will work, but you can't judge it yet. Whereas we're talking about the Dolphins, they're in the end of their cycle.
Yeah.
They need to make a call on that soon. Because it's very hard to see them rebuilding with the current infrastructure there. They're going to have to go and do something new. May as well make a call early. Use this season as your rebuilding time and maybe kick on next year. The Bears are at the very, very start of that process. The Patriots are at the very start of that process. We're all a little bit too reactionary, I think. But especially sometimes I think like some of the big media that are having these discussions are like, hold on a second, can we just look at the big picture for 2 seconds?
It's also, you mentioned it earlier, because of guys like Jaden Daniels and CJ Stroud who come in straight away and light the place up, you're kind of like, oh, we're behind schedule. You're not behind schedule at all. You're not meant to have a contending team when you've got a rookie quarterback contract.
Yeah.
It's great if you have that, but that's a benefit that comes above expectation. That's not something that's normal.
Yeah, but especially not if you've got new coach, all of that sort of stuff as well. Yeah. So that's basically it. Unless you want to talk about Giants Cowboys,
what a mental game of football.
Was that the most entertaining game?
That might be the greatest game of football ever played between like two terrible football teams and the NFC East that normally gives us the worst games ever.
How summed up of an awful game was it? Because there was some great plays in it. And by the way, like Malik Nabers looks like,
ah, he's a freak.
He could be, he's Jefferson level, like just give it, you know.
He played with Jaden Daniels in college.
Yeah.
Like imagine being on the other team. Like,
I know.
And you're some guy who's just barely got out of high school and you're trying to guard those two.
Unbelievable. And in fairness to Russell Wilson, like rolled the clock back for certain plays in that game, and fair play to him, you have to give credit where it's due. Doesn't mean I don't think he's washed up or anything, but
well, he shot a game ending interception too.
He did.
But
the Cowboys, sorry, I was going to say, is like what summed up the game was you're in the like they need a field goal to tie the game. They're like miles back and they run this like 3 yards up the middle run to make it a 64 yard field goal. And you're like, oh my God, you're the worst. You're the worst. What are you doing? And then he gets the field goal.
Comfortably.
With about 10 yards to spare. So it's like,
it was amazing. And he hit the second one he hit was fairly long as well. I think the one to win the game.
But you kind of thought that was a chip shot because...
Yeah. But look, kind of two takeaways from that game. Dak Prescott gets so much abuse and it's so ridiculous. Like, if they didn't have him, if they just had average starting quarterback, the Cowboys would be horrendously bad. He's carrying so much there and obviously he makes mistakes.
Running game is dreadful.
Yeah, and like it's CeeDee Lamb and nobody, and CeeDee Lamb's not having a good year so far.
Pickens.
Pickens
is a good number two, surely. Made a good couple of good catches.
He's one of those guys though that will also ruin a couple of plays every game, which he did as well in the first 2 weeks. But the main thing for me I want to talk about here is Russell Wilson, because Russell Wilson always had that beautiful deep ball, and it's gone away over recent years. And the assumption, the fair takeaway from that is, oh, he's washed up, he's physically gone. It's not physically gone. Clearly, it's not physically gone. He needs to change his mindset. He needs to realize, hey, Jackson Dart is breathing down my neck right now. If I'm going out, go out swinging. You have Malik Nabers there. You have Darius Slayton there. Those are two guys who can get up and deep. And Wandale Robinson catches the seam. And now, I must say, the Cowboys secondary was an absolute disaster. Now, they were nowhere to be seen.
Done, doesn't he?
Oh, the safeties are lost as well, though. Like, and I think Zal Golden run the defense there. They kept doing cover three, and they don't have the players to play cover three, which is why you see the linebacker sprinting backwards and Wandale Robinson's just running away from him, because it's like, I'm a linebacker. I'm a big guy who can stop the run. I can't turn around and run with this guy whose professional whole job is to run that way.
Yeah.
Like, he can't do that. So it was made easy for him. But if you're Russell Wilson, like, I know you're all this character guy that you've been putting together for 10 years. You've got a big ego. You've got to have your ego kick in now and go, right, I'm gonna have interceptions, that's fine, but I'm not going to do this 5-yard, 4-yard dink and dunk offense that I've been trying to do since I left Seattle. That just does not work. Just let it rip. Just fling the ball down. Let Nabers make the ridiculous plays that he made. You don't have to be perfect. One of Nabers' touchdowns where he beats Diggs and he's running towards the post, the ball should go that way. Milson misses it 10 yards that way, and Nabers is just like being a robot. He's like, all right, Grant, I'll turn and I'll go that way and still catch the ball. So you don't need to be perfect. Just be aggressive and it'll make the Giants competitive. I was going to say make them good. It won't make them good.
Well, you see, their defense is going to improve over the course of the year.
Serious pass rushers.
Like, I just feel like they're going to have big games. They're going to get to the quarterback. If they can just in any way kind of shore up the secondary, they're going to have a decent defense. So if Russell plays like this, I know they lost the game to a poor Cowboys team, but there's going to be chances to win games later in the year, but I don't trust that he's going to do what you... Good advice, but he's not going to take it.
I guarantee we're going to get this game again on primetime, and the lead-in is going to be all the highlights of these plays, and it's going to be an awful game of football, because that's what the NFC East does to us.
As always. Well, we'll see what week 3 brings us, and then we'll be back next week when we'll be very much in countdown mode to Crow Park. Only a few days away.
And the poor Dolphins will have been slaughtered by the Bills.
Well, that's tomorrow night. So enjoy week 3, and we'll be back with you next Wednesday.